Welcome to Orphaned Entertainment, the podcast that has dedicated itself to the discussion and review of public domain and abandoned media. I'm your host, Christopher, and with me as always is the woman who knows a cow when she sees one and will let everyone in the car know it too. It's Lydia.
I literally say moo.
I'm not the cows. Only one. I discovered not that long ago when I was on a long back roads trip through the state, and I'm driving along, I'm by myself, and I look over, moo cow.
Moo cow. Usually like, it's horse. I get really excited about horses, so this is going to be a long episode, guys.
Yep, I do that too. Whether I'm in my car by myself or there's anyone with me, horsey.
Horses.
Moo cow.
Ooh.
Ooh, pigs.
Sheeps. Goats. Oh, you should see me when I see a goose. Oh, my Lord.
Well, before we go any further, thanks to everyone for tuning in to this month's episode. Orphan Entertainment is available wherever you get your podcasts and wherever you choose to listen. If you have the option to do so, please rate and review the show. It really does help get the show out to more people. Another great way to help is just by sharing the episode you're listening to on whatever social media platform you use, especially if you like the episode. That'd be awesome. You can follow the link in the show notes to all our social media sites, as well as our YouTube channel. And if you'd like to email us with any comments, suggestions, or feedback on this or any episode, please type or record a message and send it to orphanedentertainment@gmail.com. No letters this month. I mean, after last month, that was a pretty awesome month with some really great letters. We have had some really great comments over on some of the films over on the YouTube channel. And there was one just posted today on Just Imagine, if you remember that one. It was the one that was from 1920-something, predicting 1980 New York.
Yes, yeah.
And they were commenting, it's like, it's funny that they thought 1980 New York would be so incredible and exciting, when in reality, 1980 New York was probably one of the worst years for that city.
Yeah.
But they did thank us for posting that film. They really appreciated it because they saw a clip of it in a documentary, Brief History of Time, I think they said.
Mm-hmm.
And then they went and sought out the whole film. So they thought that was really interesting, and they were very appreciative for us for posting the film. So I'm very glad that they enjoyed it.
That's awesome.
Let's go ahead and listen to an Ellery Queen one-minute mystery and a promo for another podcast. And when we return, we climb into our saddles and ride out to Vengeance Valley.
Ellery Queen's Minute Mysteries. This is Ellery Queen with a case I call the Curious Gangland Killing. When a small-time gangster named Lopez was found dead at the bottom of the river, police immediately assumed it was a gangland killing. Lopez was found tied tightly with cotton rope. His legs were bound together with heavy irons. Open and shut case, said the police. But I investigated and found out Lopez had a lot of insurance, and he was suffering from an incurable disease. This wasn't a gangland killing, I insisted, but a case of suicide. The police didn't believe me till I showed them why. In a moment, I'll explain.
Hi, I'm Jeff Owens.
And I'm Richard Chamberlain. And we want you to join our club, the Classic Horrors Club.
Every month, Richard and I host the Classic Horrors Club podcast, where we talk about our favorite subject, horror movies.
Some of them are classics.
We all go a little mad sometimes.
And some definitely aren't.
What you see is real. What's done is done, and what I've done is right. It's the work of science.
But we love them all the same. We also have special theme months where we highlight the legendary stars.
And we head to the drive-ins of the past every summer for exciting double and triple features.
Hi, I'm Chili Dilly, the personality pickle.
And we even have occasional guests.
My obsession, and it is truly an obsession, I suppose, of Frankenstein, the true story, dates back to when it first aired in two parts on NBC in 1973.
So join the fun and listen to the Classic Horrors Club podcast today. Hosted by SoundCloud, we're available wherever fine podcasts are found. And for even more fun, check out the video companion on our YouTube channel.
And remember,
we sincerely appreciate your patronage and hope we've succeeded in bringing you an enjoyable evening of entertainment.
In the case of the Curious Gangland Killing, you recall Lopez was tied tightly with cotton rope. Actually, he tied himself up loosely and the cotton rope tightened in the water. By appearing to have been killed, his wife would collect double indemnity, and she almost did. again to Ellery Queen's Minute Mysteries.
A Technicolor Western produced by Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer and directed by Richard Thorpe. It stars Burt Lancaster, Robert Walker, and Joanne Drew. The film was based on the 1950 novel of the same name by Luke Short. This film fell into the public domain in 1979 when MGM chose to not renew the registration in the 28th year after publication under the law at the time. In the film, Owen Daybright and his foster brother Lee Strobe return to town after a long winter cattle drive. At the saloon, they learn of a friend, Lily Faskin, has had a baby, but the father is unknown. Owen takes food and money to Lily, leading Lily's trigger-happy brother Dick to suspect that Owen is the father. We soon learn that Lee is the father when he thanks Owen for taking the money to Lily. Lee claims it happened just before he married his wife, Jen. Dick Faskin, still suspecting Owen is or knows who the father is, arranges for his brother Hub to come to town. The two are determined to beat the truth out of Owen or kill him trying. Meanwhile, the Strobe Ranch is gearing up for the spring roundup. Lee convinces his father, Arch, to make him a full part owner of the ranch, claiming that he has finally settled down. But is he sincere, or does he have larger plans for himself and darker plans for Owen? Vengeance Valley is actor Burt Lancaster's first Western. The film had a rather adult plot for the time, when dealing with illegitimate births and dysfunctional families. The tensions on screen were somewhat matched off screen. Robert Walker already had a controversial reputation. He was recently divorced from a turbulent six-week-long marriage to Barbara Ford, daughter of John Ford, or daughter of director John Ford. And because of his split with Ford, there was a considerable tension between Walker and co-star Joanne Drew, who was a close friend to Barbara Ford. Drew did not socialize with Walker after the camera stopped rolling, nor did co-star John Ireland, who was married to Drew. Burt Lancaster actually worked as a circus acrobat in the 1930s until an injury forced him to give it up. He worked at several different jobs, including salesman and as a singing waiter. He joined the Army in 43 and was discharged in 45. Arriving in New York, he was encouraged to audition for a Broadway play by a producer who happened to see him in an elevator. He somewhat reluctantly did and was cast in A Sound of Hunting. That show only ran a few weeks, but his performance was spotted by Hollywood agent Harold Hecht. Through his connections, he met Hollywood producer Hal B. Wallace, who signed him to an 8-movie contract. Technically, Lancaster's first film was 1947's Desert Fury, where he appeared in a supporting role, but after finishing that film, he was cast as the star of The Killers, which was completed and released prior to Desert Fury. This film was a huge success and set Lancaster and his co-star Ava Gardner on their path to stardom. Becoming a top box office draw allowed Lancaster to join Hecht in creating their own production company. Norma Productions was formed, and over the years they signed deals with Universal, Warner Brothers, and Columbia. In 1951, they changed the name of the company to Hecht Lancaster and signed a multi-movie deal with United Artists. Lancaster continued to act in film within and outside of the production company, notably 1953's From Here to Eternity with Deborah Kerr. Other films include The Kentuckian, which Lancaster also directed, The Rose Tattoo, Trapeze in 1956, where Lancaster performed many of his own stunts, The Rainmaker with Katharine Hepburn, Run Silent, Run Deep, and Judgment at Nuremberg in 1961. This film would receive 11 Oscar nominations, including Best Picture. Burt Lancaster continued to work, act, and produce films until his final film appearance in 1991, when he starred alongside Sidney Poitier in Separate But Equal. And yes, this is a severely abridged history of Lancaster's career. Well worth researching him on your own if you are not already familiar with his filmography. Robert Walker discovered acting at a young age as a way to deal with his parents' divorce. With the help of his aunt, he was able to enroll in the American Academy of Dramatic Arts in New York City. And there he met fellow student Phyllis Eisley, whom he married. Walker had some small, unbilled parts in films and began appearing on the radio, co-starring in Maudie's Diary, for a year beginning in the summer of 1941. Meanwhile, his wife, Isley, returned to auditioning after the births of their two sons and was discovered by David O. Selznick, who changed her name to Jennifer Jones and began grooming her for Hollywood. The couple moved to Hollywood, and through Selznick's connections, Walker was able to secure a contract with MGM. Walker's demeanor and boyish looks were popular with audience, and he quickly found himself in a starring role in the 1944 film See Here, Private Hargrove. And he also appeared that same year in Since You Went Away, in which he and Jennifer Jones portrayed doomed young lovers during World War II. Unfortunately, by this time, Jones and Selznick had become involved in an affair which had become widely known. And that made the multiple takes of the love scenes that Selznick insisted on doing a very trying experience for Walker. Jones and Walker divorced in 1945. Walker continued to work for MGM, starring alongside the likes of Spencer Tracy, Van Johnson, Judy Garland, and Hedy Lamarr. But still depressed over his divorce, Walker began drinking heavily, bringing on erratic and moody behavior. He'd sometimes disappear from the set for hours at a time. During the filming of 45's What Next, Corporal Hargrove, he vanished for several days. After Walker caused even more trouble after walking away from a drunk driving accident, MGM began loaning Walker out to other studios. He found some amount of success in one of the films, One Touch of Venus, at Universal, but a very public affair with co-star Ava Gardner created even more behind-the-scenes havoc and bad publicity. Walker soon found himself falling from stardom and being relegated to B Pictures. His personal life wasn't doing much better, and after the aforementioned whirlwind marriage with Barbara Ford, he checked himself into the Menninger Clinic to be treated for, quote-unquote, psychiatric disorder. After 4.5 months, he was released and returned to film. He was not able to find anything that had the fine and finished gloss of his previous films until Alfred Hitchcock decided to cast him as the antagonist of his thriller, Strangers on the Train. This role may be Walker's best remembered, and it appeared his career was finally turning around with garnering another co-starring lead role in Vengeance Valley. Sadly, Walker still had periods where he would lose control. One such incident occurred in 1951, and a physician administered a sedative to help him calm down. Unfortunately, Walker had been drinking beforehand, and the combination of the two made him lose consciousness and stop breathing, with attempts to revive him were not successful.
Yeah.
Seriously unfortunate, especially after watching him in this film. I do think that was a man with a crap ton of talent.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very unfortunate that he had such, in the end, such a short career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Some really memorable roles, but he's both like one of the shortest careers, but yet one of the most kind of well-known actors in Hollywood, just because of like his work with Hitchcock and then like something like this film here.
Yeah. Yeah. Really interesting.
We have not had a great amount of luck with Westerns on this show.
No, I guess we haven't, have we?
Not to bury the lead, I guess, a little bit. I feel like it turned around a little bit with this one.
I'm thinking, I'm not disagreeing, because disagreeing would require my mouth to make noise. Yeah, it's interesting. This is, I guess I was thinking when I was watching this movie, wow, this is like a real movie.
Yes.
It doesn't feel like a forgotten film. It feels like just a film you might have seen at any point on any of the classic movie channels. And I think there are only a couple of little moments in it that made me feel a little dissatisfied with it. But yeah, it doesn't feel like, oh yeah, I totally get why this was forgotten. It just is a pretty typical. I think maybe it isn't a pretty typical traditional Western. I was just about to say that because I do remember when I first was watching it being completely shocked that it starts off with a woman who's pregnant outside of wedlock.
Mm-hmm.
In 1951, obviously there was still a lot of stigma against that. And especially in film, we're still dealing with the Hays Code at this point, if I'm not mistaken. Gosh, until... For a while yet.
I imagine by 1950s, yeah, it was still pretty well enforced. I was going to say that started sometime in the mid-30s. Mm-hmm. By the 50s, it was, yeah, this was probably...
there was still the moral pressure of society, if nothing else. And so, you know, a movie that we're getting more into the 50s era of, you know, film noir and, you know, anti-heroes and things like that at this point. But this isn't that kind of movie. You're in, you know, early on in the movie, you don't know where it's going with this lady. There, you could still do this in the 1930s and have her end up a horrible, tragic ending, you know, as long as there's a moral to the story. And I think, I don't want to give anything away, but the way that she's treated throughout this movie is very, positive and progressive. I think progress is the right word for it. There's even a scene in it that I'm sure we'll get to where I kind of felt like, wow, they're treating her really well, her character really well on several different levels for where it started out. So yeah, it's interesting that it's not an awful Western. Aside from the B footage at the very beginning, which feels very much like B footage on a real cattle drive, the film quality is really high. The direction's really good. The actors is the word I was looking for, do a good job. So it's interesting. I actually didn't look deeply into the conflict behind the scenes on this, and I didn't know about it. I don't think you would pick it up without looking into it. Everybody that acted in it seemed very professional. There was no Hallmark level acting going on. Hallmark. I love you, Hallmark, but sometimes your actors are just horrible.
And maybe even some of the conflict, I think, worked to the film's advantage, because there are, in a large part of the film, when Robert Walker's character and Joanne Drew's character are at odds with each other. You know, she can't stand to be in the same room with them.
Mm-hmm.
And you feel it. And now that you know kind of like some of the stuff that's going on in the background, you're like, ooh, she did not have to dig deep.
Yeah. Yeah. There's pretty early on, there's a line where where Lee is supposed to be breaking a horse, and the horse bucks him off, and he goes and gets a bullwhip because that's the mature thing to do. But you know what? At the time, that wasn't necessarily not done. And he goes to get a whip, and pretty quickly Owen stops him. And the line he says to her, she says, "Did you have to use the whip?" And he says, "A good whipping never hurt any filly." And I went, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Boo, you know. But aside from, and I think I turned to my husband and said, and that's the rule of thumb. And then immediately he puts his arm around her and drags her off, presumably to take her back to the bedroom. I don't know. My brain went with it.
That's where my brain went too.
Yeah. And I was like, so it's interesting. I think, you know, you said that their off screen interactions may have bled heavily into her responses. It's interesting too. I was doing the math early on in the movie. I was doing the math. There's a baby that takes 9 months. It's a brand new baby, and so whatever happened about 9 months ago, and supposedly it happened before he married Jen, and they've spent the last 3 months.
Yeah,
4 months up in the mountains. Mm-hmm. So he was married to her for a couple, maybe 3-4 months, and then takes off for 3 or 4 months. Yeah, and you don't get a whole lot of backstory. You get the idea that she was a mountain girl and her parents both died, and he kind of decided he was going to look after her. And I wonder how long their relationship existed before she agreed to marry him. Because she makes a comment later in the movie about being used to being on her own. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting. It's kind of a strange... It almost makes me wonder, how did this relationship even happen? He's clearly not a mature person.
No, this is one of those films where you're watching it and they're telling you all the stuff that happened before, and you're sitting here thinking, well, I want to watch that movie.
I don't think they do it poorly. We've seen some movies where the film is so unpalatable that you really wish they would have just made the backstory instead. I know exactly what you're talking about. This isn't that movie, but you definitely
But it still sounds like it could be a very interesting story.
Yes, I agree completely with that. So it is interesting. I'd love to know. I'd like to know her story. I think she seems like a spicy cookie. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever used that phrase ever.
Well, especially because I remember in the film, they come back after, like you said, they've been gone for 2 and 3 months, and they've come back, and...
I don't know why all of a sudden you can't get dressed in front of me.
I'll be 2 more minutes, Lee.
On top of all winter, that's a long time.
I know that. Better than you.
You mean you've missed me?
Of course.
You're beautiful.
Do you think so, Lee? Do you really mean it?
First time I saw you, you were wearing a pair of split breeches.
And you helped me come out of the backcountry. You and Arch. This is the second Sunday dress I ever owned, Lee. First one I wore to my mother's funeral, and then I used it to bury my father, and then I burned it.
And now you're a lady of fashion, huh?
Well, that's what it says in Godey's ladies' book.
I haven't done many smart things in my life, but marrying you is one of them.
We'll be happy, Lee.
Nothing can stop us, honey.
Split britches, yeah.
And so, yeah, you get this idea that she's a real man. I'm trying to think who the character is. Maybe like kind of a Molly Brown kind of character before Molly Brown became Molly Brown, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the impression I get. But it is still interesting to me to think, well, of all the guys and all the gin joints, right, why would she take up with Lee? Unless he's obviously supposed to be much younger than he really is. Mm-hmm. And even it kind of surprised me because I felt like he looked older than Owen, but he's supposed to, it sounds like, be younger than Owen. Lee's dad makes the comment about bringing Owen on to show Lee the ropes. You know, 15 years ago, that's why he brought him on, right, as, you know, an orphan kind of. And so you get the impression that Owen's supposed to be older and more mature, but he kind of doesn't look it. But certainly he behaves it. So it's interesting to think of this girl who's so tough and independent taking up with a guy that's kind of frankly, very much a bit of a skeez.
Yeah, and a cad. Yes.
Oh, yeah, and his whole attitude. Oh, I see a, and I know this, I'm a progressive modern woman. We're going to use that in quotes, right? And when he says, oh, look, there's a Cheyenne, does he say a Cheyenne over there? Or he says a Cherokee over there. That's what he says, isn't it? And then he shoots a pine cone off a tree. And I'm like, what are you, 12?
Like, right.
Come on, bro. Like, really, what are you, 12? But he doesn't behave like he's anything more than 12, I think, pretty much for the whole movie.
I think he behaves like someone that has been a bit spoiled, who has not had... He's had to work, but he's been given everything he's
ever
needed.
Wanted. Yeah, oh, right. Or wanted, yeah.
And Arch even admits that he made a mistake with him. Yeah. And he was actually hoping that Owen would kind of set him on the right path because he couldn't anymore because of he was injured at some point. So he's crippled. That's right. He's on crutches. He can't do the cattle drives. He can't work the ranch like he wanted to. And like he couldn't show Lee the ropes like he wanted to. And so he maybe spoiled Lee more than he should have. And he realizes that mistake now. And that's definitely how Lee comes across. It's just someone that, yes, he's had to work the ranch, but when it comes down to it, he probably didn't have to, and he probably would have still been given anything that he could have wanted.
Yeah, and we get the image early on that he's, we'll say, good at cards, but he wins 3 hands in a row, 5 hands in a row at a time. And, yeah, I'm taking that with a grain of salt that he's, quote, good at cards, or is he just good with cards is the real question.
Yeah,
and he's just
exactly.
used to... Yeah, lying and cheating his way through anything. So maybe he's a convincing liar and that's how she ends up with him.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's why.
Well, and I think that's really interesting with the character. There's the scene when he returns back to the ranch, do everything at the saloon. They go home and he's waiting for her to kind of reveal herself. She's
changing clothes still.
She's changing clothes and she comes out and she's in this beautiful dress with her hair all done up and everything. And he looks legitimately smitten.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's just like, this looks like a guy who is seeing his wife for the first time and he's madly in love with her. And within only a couple scenes, you realize that's not really the case, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, is this a character that is just that good at putting on that front?
Mm-hmm.
Or any front.
Maybe he's got shiny thing syndrome. You know, she puts on a new dress. He's never seen her. She says, this is the second Sunday dress I've ever owned, and I burned the first one after I buried my parents.
Right.
You know, he probably legitimately hadn't seen her, let's say, dolled up before. And so his face, oh, wow, I actually married a really pretty girl. That's lucky. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe that's what it is. Maybe he was like, hey, I'll rescue you. I'll take you down here from the mountain and, you know, take you home and give you a place to live. And maybe her answer was, okay, but only if you marry me. And he goes, sure, I'll marry you. Who knows? But it is kind of funny. You get the impression very, very, very early on from the first time Owen and Jen interact, which is before before Lee and Jen interact, that she already knows Owen's such a good guy that she probably really has a crush on him. And so it's interesting. You kind of get the feeling that, you know, they're in this brother situation and Owen will give up anything for Lee's happiness, including a girl that really likes him. Maybe, I'm just talking myself into your opinion that, yeah, I would have liked to have seen that happen.
Yeah.
I would like to have seen this guy ride up to this girl with her shotgun and her split trousers, you know, saying, you know, get out of here. Who are you? You know, what are you doing on my family's property? And it's this rundown, sad little cabin with two crosses on the ground next to it, you know, and somehow this skeezy guy gets her to marry him instead of this, you know, his really actually genuinely good looking, you know, foster brother. It does sound like an interesting story. All right. That's it. That's the end of this episode, guys.
Yeah.
Let's go make the movie.
write a new movie.
No, it still is a good movie. But yeah, I think there's an element of it that I appreciate that they didn't get that into it. If they had done all that backstory and this movie on top of it, it would have been too much too long.
Oh, it would have absolutely bogged it down. I mean, this thing moves along at a pretty good click and it wraps itself up in less than an hour and 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is impressive.
Yeah. And a lot happens in it. Things just keep happening.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk a little bit about Lily.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
First of all, Sally Forrest absolutely dropped it.
Oh,
this woman.
She's beautiful.
She's
there's a
so
couple.
Pretty.
There's a few moments where the camera's on her and it's like, you could just cut that scene right there and frame it. And mm-hmm. that'd just be a beautiful picture on the wall.
I think you could argue that every shot she's in, you can't take your eyes off her. She's
no.
phenomenally pretty, but she also,
captivating.
I think, yes, that's a great word for it, and a very strong actor. We meet her when she's laying in bed, having just given birth to her baby, and there's this, you know, pretty sweet scene between her and Owen where he's checking in on her. And, you know, you get the idea, she's pretty out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But the next time we see her, I think, is when she's up at the widow's ranch, and she's making butter. She's churning butter,
yes.
If I remember right. And you got Huey there, and you get the idea he's this pretty young ranch hand, and he's completely smitten with her. And
oh,
their
and
interaction
why
is
wouldn't he be?
Adorable. Yes.
Hi, Lily.
Hello, Owen. Hello, Huey.
Good day, ma'am. How do you feel?
Feel good. Why?
I just wondered. That's mighty good to hear.
Why, thank you.
Well, I just asked because you look real fine, Lily. Just fine.
Yeah, their interaction is so cute. But then when she gets inside and starts having that conversation with Owen, and this is the scene that I was talking about where I feel like they treat her very well in this movie.
Thanks, Owen. But I'm all right again.
Look fine, Lily.
Yeah, that's what Huey says. I wish I could find the words to thank you for bringing me the money, but I can't.
Well, don't try.
I hate to see you fronting for Lee.
Well, I'm thinking of Arch.
I know. You go on standing in front of Lee, protecting him, letting his dirt rub off on you?
Maybe.
And I'm thinking of Jen and all she's done for me. That's why I can't tell. So we'll both keep it a secret.
Lily, it ain't right that you should...
Oh, and I've been afraid of a lot of things this past winter. What people would say about me. How I'd raise a baby. How I'd keep us both alive. Well, now it's happened. And I'm not afraid anymore. I'm not glad it happened. I was wrong. I know that. I'm just not afraid of living anymore.
What she says about not being afraid anymore... Oh, is such a great set of lines for her where she's, mm-hmm. he says, you know, I don't remember if he asked her if she's afraid. And she says, I was everything. I was so scared of everything, but now it's happened and I'm not afraid anymore. And you go, oh, this woman, not only is she beautiful, like what a great strength of character. She's like, I'm going to take care of this kid. He's going to have a good life. I'm going to do what it takes, and I'm going to put up with living out in the middle of nowhere with this widow, and we're going to be fine because I'm going to do it. And, mm-hmm. oh, she's so great. Her character, in any other movie, she, like, not in any other movie, but earlier movies, she would have had to have been shown as this morally decrepit, like, miserable woman who was falling down the sewers of society. And instead, we get this strong, independent, like an actual strong female character, not the bad kind, the real kind, where she's made a mistake, she's learned how to live with it, and she's going to move forward. And I love her. I think she's great. I'm impressed that they had Jen and Lily in the same movie.
I was really expecting, before the film was out, to definitely have her and Huey hook up as a couple.
I think it's implied.
Well, it's certainly implied that he's sweet on her, and maybe she realizes that he's sweet on her, and she's thinking that's he's a nice kid, and you know, maybe.
Oh, I got more than that. I think that butter scene, she's churning that butter and she's looking at him and he says, "You look fine, Lily," and she goes, "Oh, I do?" And he says, "Yes, ma'am, you do." And she's like, "And I can churn butter." I think she's not expecting anything, probably.
But yes, but then following is the line of like, I'm not afraid of raising this kid. I'm not afraid of living. And so that's a woman that if she has to, she could live her life as a single mom.
Yeah, absolutely.
But there, yes, the film does imply that there is someone in the wings, but I was really expecting this film to be this like, well, you can't end the film with her single. She has to get married because obviously that wouldn't be the right thing to do.
Yes. But she can't marry the man that knocked her up. He's married.
Right. No, of course not.
And he's also a jerk.
Yes. But yes, so that's why I was expecting them to, for Huey and her to be kind of like a B plot, their courtship, and then him to proposed to her before the end of the film or something like that.
I actually expected Owen to do the right thing and marry Lily.
Oh, interesting.
That was kind of where I was going because Jen's already married. Obviously, he can't marry her, you know. And then, well, because of course we don't know how it ends.
Right.
And so, you know, you don't really have divorce back at this time.
Not that I know of.
No, I probably not sanctioned. I think typically what it would be she just, his wife left him. You mm-hmm. know, and then, oh, you kind of make some moral allowances for the wife's been gone for several years now. And
or it's more likely that he would just up and leave her and move to the next town
yeah.
and leave her behind to fend for herself.
Right. Yeah. But, you know, from a legal divorce perspective, it would be known that
yes.
they're gone. You're not ever going to see that person again. So, but yeah, I, you know, obviously Lily can't marry Lee. Also, their names will start with L's, so that would be pretty much just, you know, a travesty. And now I've got listeners that are going, but my spouse has, their name starts with the same letter as mine. I'm just being facetious. Yeah, that was really what I expected, kind of from the very beginning, was for Owen to, again, like, I hate to put it this way, but, you know, jump on the grenade for Lee.
Yeah, I was going to say sacrifice his happiness to...
Yeah, not that he would necessarily be unhappy with Lily. She seems phenomenal. So it's interesting. There was one other thing I wanted to mention. It happens a little earlier. How does it happen earlier? Or does it happen after this when Arch is talking to Lee at the dinner table and says, it looks like you owe me some money again? And when it comes out that he took $500 out of the bank, mm-hmm. and Jen was there when Owen dropped off the food and the money for Lily, and it was $500 in gold. Mm-hmm. And her face, Jen's face, when Arch says it was $500, you took it out in gold. Oh, it's good. The acting in that moment, you believe she's just like, wait, what?
That is something I really appreciate about this film, is everyone in this film is smart. Mm-hmm. It doesn't play anyone to be the idiot.
Yes. Even like the kind of bad guys, the cattle rustlers, even them, they're not dumb. The brothers, when Lily's brothers show up, neither of them are stupid. Also, side note, I've got a little crush on Hub.
Really?
Oh, yeah. John Ireland, I think, he doesn't get much screen time in this, but I would love to see a movie about his character. I think he's a bad guy, and you want to watch. He's a Doc Holliday kind of bad guy.
You wonder what he's been off doing.
Yes.
And he comes into town on the train. The sheriff is there at the station.
Hello, Hub. I got your letter a week ago. You're an uncle. How's Lily? She's doing all right. Who's that? The law.
Brothers, ain't you?
I'm gonna kill a man before I leave here.
Anybody special? Or what I do?
I don't know the man yet, but I will. Keep an eye on me. The name's Faskin.
The brass balls.
Yes. He's badass. I really appreciated him. So what's really interesting too, then we see when he and his brother show up at Lily's place, and it's interesting. It's like she could be afraid, but she's holding it down. And she says, I didn't send for you. Mm-hmm. She wants him to leave. Right. And he says, you know, we're family. There's no love lost between us. And I'm like, what kind of family did these people grow up with? I feel like they are probably from a family of actual like bad guy bandits. Like their dad is the leader of their gang. And if you don't call him boss, you get backhanded, you know, and you think, gosh, no wonder Lily ran away. If this is what her brothers are like, even if they're there to quote, defend her honor unquote by killing somebody, which, you know, it's the wild, wild west. Mm-hmm. But, I feel like their whole family would be a really interesting story. And, you know, oh, man. Yeah, I like that about this movie, though. I like that there's so much interesting backstory that you're able to speculate and it still be entertaining. And I don't feel like I've been cheated by not knowing all these things. It just adds to it. It enriches it. It makes you feel like this world existed before the movie started, where there are so many movies that we watch, mm-hmm. you know, and especially as we get into the, I would say, lower rated ones that have been kind of brushed aside. There are a lot of times where you feel like that the world was invented for the movie when the main actor walks into it. And before that, nothing else ever happened. And if you get backstory, you get it as narration or as awkward, uncomfortable dialogue. And in this case, everything's implied. It's not spoon-fed to you. It's not narrated. Well, there is some questionable narration. I have to admit that. It's some probably unnecessary narration. All narration is probably unnecessary, but it doesn't feel forced. It doesn't feel painfully fed to you for the most part. I like the backstory in this.
No, but I like what you said that, you know, a lot of films, it feels like nobody does anything until the star walks onto the set. This film, you really feel like Burt Lancaster walked into a world that was already very well defined.
Yes.
Everything that goes on would continue to go on whether he was there or not.
Yes.
The guys working the ranch and eating the food and complaining about the guys cooking and, you know, all this stuff, all the little jokes and the, you know, amongst the men and mm-hmm. all that was going to happen whether we were watching it or not.
And it doesn't have to be explained. If it doesn't need to be, I keep saying spoon-fed, but you don't need to be explained every little joke for it to be funny, because you just feel like you're walking in where people are really living and really existing. And when they laugh, you laugh because you understand the situation. It's a common human kind of existence. I was thinking about Seven Brides for Seven Brothers. I just kind of was tossing my head around, partly because this movie reminded me a lot of that movie. Not because they're similar in storyline, not because they're both musicals, nothing like that, which of course they're not. But it has a remarkably similar kind of character of the lifestyles of these people. The lifestyles in Seven Brides for Seven Brothers are really similar to this. Interestingly, everything in this movie feels a lot more genuine. Like, it's not filmed on a set or on a stage. It feels like it's all happening in the real world. But it feels like it's like the grittier version of Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, almost. Yeah. Like, if that were cast in a place where people really could get shot in the back, it would look like this.
No, I love, you talked about the filming, not on a set or anything. And you're right, because all of this is filmed, I think they were in Colorado I think Colorado at some place.
They ride up to some cabins that you look at and go, that looks like it was a real cabin really falling down. And somebody just said, hey, let's film it here.
Let's film here.
Yeah.
And we see legitimate, you know, cowboys herding cattle. And this is all, there's only one moment when we see Lee trying to break the horse that they do a not so great rear projection to actually make it look like he's on the horse.
Yeah, I can think of, I think, one other scene, too, where they use that same thing.
Yeah. It's one blemish in an otherwise very beautifully shot film.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it really benefits itself by not being on the back lots and not being, I mean, you are out in the field, you're out in the prairie, you're out in the mountains.
It sells it, and it
adds to the realism of what you're watching.
It's interesting. You mentioned that every character in here is well acted. Everybody feels pretty real. Even the doctor at the very beginning, even though his attitude is he won't help deliver a baby unless the baby has been claimed by the father, which, wow, what a jerk.
Yeah, he won't go unless the father asks him to.
What about your physician's oath, mister? Wow, I thought that existed like in Grecian times. So, man, what the heck? What use are you? But, you know, they're making a point, right?
Yes, very much.
One of the kind of side characters that shows up, Mr. Calhoun, who's going to buy a whole bunch of cattle from Lee. He's another character that I'm like, man, I would have loved to have seen more of him. I don't think there's a single character in here that I thought that I wouldn't have been interested in seeing their backstory.
And their stories and the world is really just rich, and even just little minor things. You got the one guy who claimed one of the cattle, and we're like, well, hang on a second. No, that looks like a bar and an O. Oh, sorry. It looked like my brand. You satisfied? Yeah, I'm good.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, just little things like that. Just these are things that I'm assuming happen on cattle drives we've never been privy to.
Yeah.
This film is a little bit like we were watching The Silver Horde, and we learned way more about the salmon industry than we ever thought that we would. This is a little bit of that, but I think it's done a little better. It's not.
You're getting glimpses. Endless. You're not being given a tutorial.
Yes, exactly. And so that made it a lot of fun, because you get a little bit more of, I guess, the reality of being a cowboy.
Yeah.
Where so many of the Westerns, you're just a cowboy. You strut around town, you have shootouts, and you get the girl at the saloon or whatever.
And there are no cows.
And there's no cows. And you never hear about the fact that these people have to be out in the mountains or out in the prairie for months at a time dealing with this herd. And then letting the cows go off and wander, and then they have to go and find them all, and then split them up into all their, and find theirs.
Yeah.
You know, and split them up. And I'm like, wow, I never thought about that.
Yeah. The closest thing I can think of that's even close to being in that kind of vein is the man from Snowy River. Like, there's a lot of that being in the saddle for weeks and months at a time out there looking after the cattle. And even, you know, we've seen, gosh, if you haven't seen a John Wayne movie, where you been? And, you know, even if you're looking at things like The Searchers, or you're looking at The Rare Breed, which is probably another one that gets a little closer to what it's like to look after cattle, but not as much as this one does. It is interesting. I think you don't get that grittiness of cowboys until, I'm not going to be able to pick out a specific movie and say, well, this is the next time that this shows up. But it feels a lot more, I think you said the word rich earlier. There feels a lot more richness to the story. And you don't watch it and go, well, those cattle are obviously filmed out in the real world, and those people are obviously on horses but in front of a projection. It's really interesting. I think I would have expected it to be rear projection lot filming. I feel like maybe I came into this movie with really low expectations, and it kind of blew me away.
If there is any drawbacks to the film, one, yes, is the narration by Huey.
Yeah,
so a very minor character, and he's narrating our story for some reason.
Yeah.
And let me ask you if you think, is Owen Daybright a little too good of a person?
You're asking if I think he's a Mary Sue. Isn't that what they call him? Mary Sue's or Mary Ann's, something like that. The character that's just too perfect. There are moments when you could make that argument. There are also moments when you could make the argument that he just gets lucky. You know, do good people attract positive energy? I think where I see his conflict coming in is that he's willing to allow Lee to get away with bad things because he feels like he owes it to Arch. Mm-hmm. I think, too, there's a point where he says something about moving on. You know, it's that the place is going to go to Lee, and it's time for me to move on. And the shot focuses on Arch, and Arch is kind of like, haha, yeah, right. And then his face really shifts, and he says, "You're serious? You're really going to go?" And so you don't get spoon-fed the conflict. I don't think he says, well, I just don't feel like I can keep supporting Lee and the way he behaves anymore. But you can make a strong argument for that probably being why he feels like he needs to move on. Mm. Maybe also he's got a thing for Jen, which seems pretty obvious to me. If he ain't going after Lily, he better have a thing for Jen.
Well, even Arch saw it. Arch is actually, for as little screen time as he had in this film, he is one of my favorite characters because, again, he's not a stupid man. He is not just some old farm boy or anything like that.
My son is perfect.
He's talking to Lee at some point.
Yeah.
And he mentioned something of like, are you just running off because you're in love with Jen?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he knows. He knows the truth. And I just really, again, it's just one of those moments. It's like, well done, film.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. I think you could make the argument that Owen is too good to live, that he's too good to be believable. But I don't think he is either. I think, you know, you see it with the cattle rustlers where, you know, he goes out looking for those four-headed steer. And when he comes across them, he's going to get him back hell or high water, even though he could do the right thing. He could turn the other cheek. He could say, he could give the guy an out, you know, and say, oh, you know what? Look, let me look at all the cattle. We'll check and see if there have been any branded recently. Then, you know, we'll take it before the judge or whatever. And he doesn't do that. He's like, nah, I'm going to get into a fist fight over it, you know.
Right.
So I think you could argue he's too good. I think you could argue that nobody gets that lucky that many times.
Mm.
That's probably truer. But if he doesn't get lucky that many times, you don't have a film. So I'm not mad about it.
Let me just, for anyone who saw the film and maybe hear me saying something, it just occurred to me. It's like, I think Arch wasn't talking to Lee or Owen. He was actually talking to Jen. He knew that Jen was in love with Owen.
Yes, which makes a lot of sense to me. And again, raises that question of how did she end up with Lee? Unless she met Owen shortly after she met Lee and married him. But it is one of those, that's one of those things too, where I'm like, I think you're right. I think Lee could be a really good actor. He could be a really good liar. And maybe she's young enough that it took her a little while to understand what she was getting into.
Yeah. It could be that Lee met her. He was out on one of the cattle drives or something and came across her homely little homestead, whatever that was, married her, and then brought her back to the ranch.
Yeah, which would make a lot of sense.
And that's how everyone met her. I think even Arch mentioned something about when you brought
her home.
Jen, if you brought her home, I thought that was another one of your mistakes, but that was probably the best thing. I think he said it was one of the best things you've done.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense in that context for him to have found her and married her and brought her home. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, I think.
Yeah.
Let's just keep figuring this out.
Yeah, it was a very surprising and entertaining film. It just, it was not the typical, it was not one of your Westerns that we've watched that is just, oh, here's the guy in the black
cowboys.
Hats, here's the guy at the white cap,
yep,
the white hat. No, this was an actual really nice, kind of just nice drama.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think it's been pretty interesting. I think the end, I'm not going to get into the ending of it because I think if you haven't watched this movie, you should watch it. Regardless of what rating we end up with, I think it's worth a watch. Unless you just are one of those people that would rather die than watch Western. But even in that case, I don't feel like, I think this what you just said makes an argument for this, even if you don't like Westerns. Because it's not about the macho, tough guy walking down the middle of the street. It's about, people that are interacting with each other and genuinely trying to do right by each other or genuinely trying to do wrong by each other. And I think it's an interesting question to ask, who's the bad guy in this movie? Because nominally, there's a guy that walks in a black hat and he walks into town and tells the sheriff, I'm going to kill somebody. Nominally, he's the bad guy. But he's here for a legitimate reason. Whether we agree with it now or not. Whether people agreed with it then or not. He has a reason to be there. And maybe his intentions aren't good, but he's at least got a good reason for him. And I think you can argue that that's not true of everybody in this film.
So should we go ahead and give it some ratings? Is there anything else you want to talk about? I'm afraid if we talk about anything else, we'll start giving away a little too many spoilers. And you're right, I don't want to do that. So should we go ahead and rate this one?
Yeah, I think we can go right ahead and rate it. I'm interested to hear what you think.
I think, especially after talking about it and kind of really fine-tuning my thoughts on it as we're discussing it and everything, I'd be willing to easily give this one a 4. I really think it is above par from a lot of other quote-unquote Westerns. It's really a really great story about people trying to, like you said, trying to do right. This could be set in any kind of circumstance. It just so happens that they set it in the West on a cattle ranch.
Yeah.
Great characters, some phenomenal cast. And yeah, I'll stop there and just say it's a 4 for me.
Yeah. I think there aren't a lot of Westerns that I could compare this with. You guys will hear me talk about it again. One of my favorite Westerns of all times, and probably my favorite Western ever, is Silverado.
Yeah, thank
it's
you.
It's just unimpeachable. It's so great. People are going to say, no, that's not the best Western of all time, but it has got every piece that you want to see in a Western.
I love Silverado. Oh,
it's so incredible.
That's probably my favorite Western too. A brilliant score, fantastic cast.
The cast is phenomenal. Yeah. Everything about it, there's the tension and the drama. It's got John Cleese in it.
Yeah. And then, if you want your shootouts, it's got that too.
Yes, it's got Jeff Goldblum in it. I mean, these are people that you would think, wait, what? In a Western, they're incredible. My dad recommended this one. Hi, Dad, to me. I think he recommended The Big Country to me with Gregory Peck. And it's another one of those movies that Gregory Peck, Charlton Heston, Gene Simmons. And it's hard to explain how good it is. there are not a lot of movies out there. There are not a lot of Westerns out there. You guys, you're listening to the voice of a woman who hated The Searchers, who hated True Grit, both versions of it. And I don't hate Westerns on principle. I love horses. I'm a freaking horse girl. But there is a level of machismo that will turn me off to a film so fast. And so I struggle with some of the really iconic Westerns that are out there. But when we're talking about really, really good ones, we're talking about, to me, The Big Country. You're talking about Silverado, where the guy is out there because he has a real reason to be out there. And I honestly think this is, I don't know that I can say this is on par with Silverado or The Big Country, but I think this comes closer to it than most other Westerns I've ever seen. It, the one real drawback for me is I feel like it had, you've got a whiplash ending. You know, you've got the big climax, and then like the movie ends in like 2 minutes after that. And I would have liked to have seen just a little bit more of a wrap up. I can't give it a five. Five is rain. You know, there are movies out there that are fives. I think we both gave Street Angel fives, and we don't give across the field fives very often. I can't give this movie a five, but not because I don't think that it's worth watching, not because there is any acting in it that's poorly done or cinematography that's badly done. There are a couple of little drawbacks to it. I think it's an exceptional movie. I don't think that it's one of the best movies ever made. That's the only reason I'm going with four. I'd like to give it five stars, but I can't honestly do that. Five Othels. Oh, Othels.
That's a little bit why I settled on four. It is not the greatest movie, but it is above average.
Yeah. If you're going to watch a 1950s Western, watch The Big Country. But if you're going to watch a second 1950s Western, this is a strong candidate for it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, it was, I really enjoyed it. And it's one that I can see myself going back to and just, you know, watching for the heck of it a little bit. If for no other reason, because it's a Western where people get beat up and they look like they got beat up.
Yes, I love that too. Also, Sally Forrest, man, that's enough of a reason to go back and rewatch this movie. She is
absolutely
just phenomenally beautiful.
Yes.
Her eyes are just incredible. And I'm not knocking Joanne Drew. She's also a very beautiful woman.
No, but I did fall into Sally Forrest's eyes more than once.
I even did. This is, I haven't had a lot of experience with Burt Lancaster, but I really enjoyed him. For some reason, I think I've mixed him up with Charlton Heston in the past. Also a phenomenal actor, but always feels a little too intense to me, like Willem Dafoe. And Burt Lancaster felt like relaxed, like, oh, I could stand to be around this guy and not feel like I need to get, my testosterone adjusted or anything that. He doesn't seem like, oh, God, if he says one more thing, I want to slap him. I appreciate that. Now I actually feel like I need to watch more Burt Lancaster at this point.
And yeah, I'm just like you. I wasn't real familiar with, I mean, I know of his films. I know of him, but I've seen very few of them. Mm-hmm. And so watching him in this one, a fairly early one in his career and his first Western. And yeah, you're right. He comes across as just a very relaxed and especially in a Western where you're used to thinking or seeing someone like John Wayne or Clint Eastwood that is just very exuding macho masculinity and machismo, and I'm here and I'm going to do this and I'm going to do it with gusto. And Burt Lancaster comes in and he's just like, he's just a guy.
Yeah. Yeah. If that's not enough reason to like him, he was in 6 episodes of Sesame Street. That is a stand-up man. Yeah.
Awesome.
As Bert. Not to be confused with Bert and Ernie Bert, as himself.
No, of course not.
But yeah, I think looking through it, I hope we run across something else with him in it. And even if we don't, I want to go out and watch something. Oh gosh, he was in Apache. He was in just so much stuff. He was in Field of Dreams, guys. You've seen him in something.
Yeah. Like I said, my history, I started going through and started ranking notes. I'm like, my God, I'll be here for half an hour just talking about him and his film and his work. His kind of, he did a lot of stuff with, he was really good with bringing in younger actors and trying to, give them a chance. And he's was an amazing man. And yeah, kind of like a gift to Hollywood.
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm kind of ashamed that I'm not more familiar with his, with his filmography.
Well, hashtag movie goals. Mm-hmm. We'll start working on that, I think. It's funny because it's one of those things where you know you've seen him in other stuff. You just got to go back and go, oh, that was him. He was in Zulu Dawn? What? Oh, my gosh. He was in, oh, my gosh, he was in. So, yeah, this is, I think this is a lot of a fun movie to be introduced to him with. Lovely to get to see his first Western. And man, what a Western to be in as your first Western ever. Even if there was a lot of tension back behind the scenes, the product is wonderful and highly, highly recommended to everybody that's listening.
Absolutely. Well, I think that is going to do it for this month and Vengeance Valley. Hope you've enjoyed hearing us ramble on, and hope you went. I hope this inspires you to go see the film if you have not already.
Yes.
I guess we'll be back in a month with another film. Until then, thanks very much for listening. As always, if you have any thoughts on this or any episode, write or record a message and send it to orphanedentertainment@gmail.com. Follow the link in the show notes to all the social media and join us. Come join us on the Facebook group. Come join the Discord server. We will talk to you in a month. Lydia, as always, thank you so much. This is, God, it's always so much fun, especially when we get a film that's just like, this enjoyable. It's
good.
Just, it was a good film. Yes.
Yeah, especially when we get a good film. Yeah. I agree. Thank you.
Well, we'll talk to everyone later. Bye, everyone.
Bye.